You see, most gamblers, when they go to gamble, they go to win. When we go to gamble, we go to lose. Even when we win, it's just a matter of time before we give it all back.
This is the Bet Slippin' Podcast,
featuring Jeff Clark and Eston McLaren from USA Today Sportsbook Wire.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
No way.
Join them on their journey as they grow from gambling writers to sports betting sharps.
I mean, it's the gambling business. Occasionally get punched in the face.
You're listening to the Bet Slippin' Podcast. Now, Jeff Clark and Eston McLaren.
I'm shocked, to find that gambling is going on in here.
We're rolling along here at the Bet Slippin' Podcast. It's Wednesday, August 11th, and NFL preview slash primer season continues. We're doing the AFC West and the AFC South, as you can see through the title of the episode and description of the episode. Also, if you're an occasional listener, you heard us talk about the AFC East and the AFC North last week, and then tell everyone that we were going to talk about these divisions this week. So let me bring in my handicap and hype man, gambling consigliere in the sharper half of this podcast, the homie Eston McLaren. Eston, what's up?
Thank you, Jeff. Excited to break down the AFC South and the AFC West. You know, went a little overboard on AFC North futures last week. Found some level ground with the AFC East. But yeah, back to two more divisions here. And we just talked briefly before the show. Talked about how overs are always the hype play in preseason futures. I'm seeing a lot of unders on this card. I can't wait to talk about those.
Yeah, these are two interesting divisions, in my opinion, just for completely different reasons. Like the AFC West, most of their interest or most of like the interesting storyline surrounding that division is like within the lines on the football field, right? You know, you got Mahomes, who is this era's GOAT. Has all the talent in the world. Justin Herbert on the greatest rookie season ever for a quarterback, actually. And I'm interested in the bottom half of the division as well for football reasons, even though John Gruden is an interesting name that gets talked about for non-football things, in my opinion. Whereas AFC South, it's like, there's a lot of drama. Like it was a bummer reading the Houston Texans like preview chapters and Warren Sharp and the Football Outsiders Almanac. It pretty much read like the script of a daytime soap opera. It was a real bummer. Like I'm reading about front office names I don't care about knifing each other in the back. It's like, what are we talking about? Because I mean, I don't know. As we're going to talk about here in a few seconds, actually, we're going to start with the AFC South, and we'll just kick it off now. And we're flipping the script this week on the order of teams that we talk about. Last week, we went from the teams with the best odds to the worst odds. This week, we're going to go with the worst odds to the best odds. So in the AFC South, which is where we're starting, the team with the worst odds is the Houston Texans. They're plus 20,000 to win the Super Bowl. Do I have that right? Plus 20,000, according to Tipico?
Yeah, and to put that in perspective a little bit, like that's the price of the 156th guy in a 156 man PGA Tour field. Like that's how bad these Houston Texans are. Before the show, I tried to like think of a team that went into a season with such little hope or such little to be excited about. And it's tough, right? Like even last year with the Jets, like there was still a hope that Sam Darnold was going to be your quarterback. There was still a hope for the Jacksonville Jaguars that Gardner Minshew could be somebody, at least had some hype around him. Who on this Houston Texans team is anyone excited for? Brandon Cooks is a fine wide receiver, except when there's nobody to throw him the ball. Like this team's a total disaster. Plus 20,000 may not be high enough.
It's not. I don't know where you set the line, though, but I'm not going to buy a 20,000. I wouldn't buy a 30,000. Yeah. So
no, I would love to hear from anyone who's on the fringe of betting a Houston Texans Super Bowl futures, aside from the diehard fans who would have already betted at whatever number. Like, what number would get you to put $5 on the Houston Texans to win Super Bowl 56?
I don't think
I have a price.
Yeah, I don't think we need to even talk much more about the Houston Texans winning the Super Bowl. Let's go further down the odds. Do you think plus 9,000 on the AFC? Right? No. Division, plus 3,000? No. To make the playoffs? Yes, plus 750. No, plus or minus 1,200. That might be interesting, minus 1,200.
Right, like, any of these feats are as difficult as them winning the Super Bowl this year. Like, they can't do any of these things.
To answer your previous point, a team that came in with less hope, and it's the quarterback or a similar team that came in with as much or as little hope. And the starting quarterback of the Houston Texans was the same starting quarterback of this team. But remember the first year of Sean McDermott, the Bills, where they were like obviously kind of tanking. Everyone talked about them being in tank mode, but Sean McDermott is a G. Tyrod Taylor is a consummate professional. Locker rooms love him, and you know he's got a good head on his shoulders. So the Bills ended up winning, I think, 10 games that year, making it to the playoffs. But similar type of vibe, except without the drama.
So the Texans are going to try to run that back with a 6 or 7 year older Tyrod Taylor? Like, come on.
I know. And it's, you know what's even worse about the Texans, honestly, is that Deshaun Watson is unquestionably a top five quarterback in the league. And if he were bought in, like, he could make their new coach, David Culley, look good, right? I mean, I'm not an X's and O's guy. I think the biggest thing or the best thing a coach can do in all professional sports is just get their locker room to like them, like each other, like him, buy in, like just be super down for it, you know? But obviously that's not the case with Deshaun Watson, the Houston Texans. He demanded a trade last year in this offseason after a 4-12 season last year that cost Bill O'Brien his job. The Houston Texans botched the hiring process of the front office of the head coach. And then that caused Deshaun Watson to demand a trade. And again, this analogy was in the Football Outsiders Almanac. But if you go through the details of their head coach and front office search, it essentially read like the Game of Thrones. It's a joke. Like, it's the backstabbing and just like the awkwardness of the whole thing. And Watson was over it. And then Watson got accused of sexual assault by a whole mess of women. And it's impossible to trade him given the uncertainty of his status moving forward. That's a scandal and a subject we're not going to cover. We're not going to talk about much other than, like, I don't think Deshaun Watson can come back this season, like, really at all. I mean, I'm pretty sure his hearing or the deposition, it got pushed back until February. Can you really have him out there with this over your head? I would venture to guess no. Right.
After everything, the absolute best thing for the Houston Texans would have been to be forced into a trade of Deshaun Watson. He was coming off a fantastic season, you know, young quarterback, top three, top five in the league, wherever you want to peg him. But yeah, then he made himself untradeable. Like, nobody wants, there's teams that need quarterbacks, teams that we're going to talk about on the show that need quarterbacks. The only thing holding them back is not having a quarterback. Deshaun Watson would be a great fit. But now you can't have him. You can't go and trade anything for him. So, yeah, the Houston Texans are stuck here with all these other holes. Didn't have a first-round draft pick this year and now have a quarterback that they can't play and can't get anything for. Under 4.5 wins for the Texans, minus 150. Minus 1,200 to not make the playoffs. That's a fine bet. That's chalk you can swallow.
Yeah. Even further, the bummer on this, in my opinion, is the fact that Aaron Rodgers looked out the door. They took all of the Green Bay Packers stuff completely off the board in a lot of casinos, a lot of sports books, because no one knew what he was going to do. And then just all of a sudden he changed his mind. He's like, you know what? I'm going to run it back. I wouldn't completely rule that out for Deshaun Watson. As ridiculous as it sounds, as unlikely as it sounds, but again, you got the law or the sexual assault trial or whatever situation hanging over his head. So I don't even think he could come back if that were the case. And if he did come back, I'm playing the Texans regardless of the drama, because the regression stuff, which is difficulty of schedule, injury luck, turnover luck, one loss stuff, and one score games, which we'll go over every team that we're discussing, all eight through both divisions, the regression stuff looks good. 6 easiest schedule by opponents, projected win totals. The 28th toughest schedule, so very easy according to Football Outsiders. Very easy schedule of opposing offenses, so that weak-ass defense might get a little bit of a break. They were 2-8 in one-score games with, again, a top-5 quarterback unquestionably in the league. The guy was first in completion percentage over expectation, so Bill O'Brien did a shitty job of dialing up good plays, getting wide receivers open. Didn't matter. He's hitting them in the hands, right? They had the seventh healthiest roster, so they didn't have a whole bunch of like injury bad luck. But minus 9 in turnover differential, minus 16 in sack differential, 26 in fumble luck. So if he was just like, you know what, whatever, you're paying me $150 million, this is my show, I like the coach, he's a nice guy, let's do it. Like, I'm all in. All right, let's go, Texans, let's do it. But he probably ain't coming back. They're thinking about trading him to Philly. That's where a lot of the rumors suggest that he's going. We'll talk about this in a few weeks. I'm holding an under Philly ticket, under 6.5 wins, or under 7 wins, excuse me. So, you know, that would scare me. But again, they trade for him. Does he get on the field? Like, this isn't just a matter of, like, he's holding out, they're not going to play him. He's holding out, and I don't think he can play. I don't know. The whole thing's confusing. If anything, I lean to an alt win total, if you could find it, at plus money for under 3.5, because as much as I like Tyrod Taylor, I don't know. Is he a top 32 quarterback in the league? I don't know. We're going to talk about Drew Lock in a few minutes here. It's tough, but there's backups that are probably better, have more upside than Tyrod Taylor, and that bums me to say. One of which would be like Jameis Winston, who could be starting, could be backup, but whatever.
Mitch Trubisky. Why didn't the Texans go out and, well, I guess Deshaun was still going to play for them, but
yeah, they're paying some guy $150 million. I don't,
right, absolutely. But yeah, like I'd take Mitchell Trubisky over Tyrod Taylor, whatever else, and backfield's a disaster of, you know, the 2010 Madden All-Pro team, and just come on.
Well, I mean, their D-line was cheap, unproductive. They just lost their leader, J.J. Watt. I mean, the linebackers,
the needle. All those regression metrics you mentioned, or progression metrics, like, yeah, except the reason for them being, like, hidden as good in those areas last year, like, those are gone.
Right.
Like, J.J. Watt's gone. Deshaun Watson's now not going to see the field. Like, yeah, like, those metrics are all well and good, but you still need people to make it happen, and they just don't have people to do that.
Yeah, and to kind of wrap up the Texans, because we spent too much time talking about them, the 4.5 from our friends at Tipico Sportsbook is juiced on the over plus 125 and the under is minus 150. I think that kind of tells you all that you need to know. There's not a lot of value in there for me. I'm not going to bet it. I know it was a fun joke to talk about the Texans missing the playoffs minus 1,200. I'm just not going to get my money tied up for the next 4 months in that, even though it's a lock, you would think. So I don't really have any plays for the Texans. I was looking at Brandon Cooks over 900 yards because, I mean, he's consistently over 1,000 yards, 1,000 yards in 5 of 7 seasons. He did have one dud season with Jared Goff, and he had an injury season 1 year as well. But, you know, again, who's throwing him the ball, and can I really bank on that? You know, it is a weak division defensively, but I don't have any play here, so I don't think we should be talking about them any further. But let's move on to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who is a team I am actually high on. Their odds to win the Super Bowl are plus 8,000. To win the AFC is plus 4,000. To win the AFC South is plus 900. To make the playoffs is plus 300 for the yes. The no is minus 430. And their win total is 6.5 with minus 110 each way. I'm interested because I'm grinding the NFL in this offseason, as you know. And you have a big boy job, whereas I do not. So I spend all the time reading this shit. And I'm interested in what your thoughts are on Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence and all this and the Jacksonville Jaguars. So I'll let you lead it off. Are you putting action in any of these lines? Any player props? Any of that?
I'm in on the Texans. Sorry, not down. That'd Wait, be negative. But yeah, like I'm
Jaguars.
I'm on the Jaguars train. Sorry. Urban Meyer. We'll see. I think he's the one that has the uncertainty. Trevor Lawrence, I'm super hyped for. I don't think there's any reason not to be, at least at this stage. Travis Etienne, yeah. not really sure that pick was necessary, but whatever. Keep Lawrence happy, bring in his running back. Fine. All well and good. You know, we know James Robinson's still good. And you know, going out and getting Marvin Jones as a free agent, that was a super smart move to me. I think that is a big addition to this, you know, otherwise young receiving core. You can pair with DJ Shark on the outside. A lot of people, especially in fantasy football, very excited for Laviska Shenault this year. Yeah, I'm on this team. Daryl Bevel comes in here with a lot of coaching experience. The defense, you know, that was kind of the only thing they had trying last year or had much hope for. It didn't really work out in any way. Pass rush was okay. Run stop was middle of the pack. But yeah, I think if I'm a Jaguars fan, I'm excited for the season. And what is their win total? 6.5. That's very low for me. Over -110. I like that quite a bit, especially if you want to go ahead and bank them 2 wins against the Texans, you know, a win or two against the combination of the Titans and the Colts. I think they can do well in this division and hang as the third team behind the Colts and the Titans anyway. +300 for the playoffs, probably not rewarding enough for me. I'm not overly interested there, but hey, I think the future is bright for once in Jacksonville, and over 6.5 wins is a very safe play in my eyes.
Bright for, you said Lawrence in Jacksonville?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's not a lot of regression stuff to get into with the Jacksonville Jaguars for the obvious reason, right? They're changing their coach and staff, moving on from Doug Marrone and hiring Urban Meyer. Just note that they are playing the 6th easiest schedule according to opponents' win total, 2nd easiest according to Football Outsiders. If you look at the first, 5 games, even 6 games of this schedule, man, it sets up nicely for Jacksonville. So they have a road game week 1 against Houston, which, again, everyone's down on, rightfully so. There's no chance they're going to have Deshaun Watson for that game. So, you know, and they're actually a favorite, 2.5 points right now, which is one of the few lines that they're favored or games they're favored in this season. Actually, one of two. The other one is at home against Houston. And week 2, they're at home against Denver. We'll talk about Denver in a minute. I like their defense. I'm higher on Denver than you are, but it's a road game for a West Coast team in Florida in September. Now, this is typically a tough weather spot for teams because it is hot as shit in Florida in September. It's hot, it's humid, and teams wear out in the second half of games. Week 3, they host the Arizona Cardinals. Since when is Cliff Kingsbury versus Urban Meyer a good matchup for Cliff Kingsbury? Since when? I'll just leave it there. Week 4, they're in prime time against at the Cincinnati Bengals. Again, I think there's going to be a huge coaching edge for Jacksonville in that spot.
Please tell me that's Thursday Night Football.
It is Thursday Night Football.
Okay.
Two #1 picks going back facing each other in Joe Burrow and Trevor Lawrence, a rematch of the national title game a couple years ago. Then they host the Titans in week 5, but at least it's a home game, and they have extra time to prep for a Titans defense, which is pretty bad and might be bad again this season. And then they play their London home game against Miami. So, you know, I don't believe Miami's played in London since Brian Flores took over the job, so who knows how acclimated they'll be to it, and it's kind of a toss-up game. Then they have a bye week. Schedule gets tough after that, but man, I like those first 6 games. And if they get out to 4-2, 5-1, I don't know. There's going to be some positive momentum. And the whole Urban Meyer thing. So this is when I tune out other people, is when you hear football handicappers, analysts, media people, whatever, broadcasters start talking about Urban Meyer and like, I don't know if his rah-rah style is going to work in the pros. Immediately, you can turn off that segment because they don't know shit. They don't know what they're talking about. Urban Meyer's issue, fault in college, more as a human than as a football coach, was that he wasn't like rah-rah enough. This dude, and you can take it as criticism, you can take it however you want, but he didn't care about like growing boys into men. He cared about football, right? And the NFL is about wins, losses, and money. That's what it's about. And he is a football genius. Urban Meyer is unquestionably the second best college coach in this era behind Nick Saban. And as unquestionably as Nick Saban's the best, it's that locked in as Urban Meyer's number two. He is an all-time great college football coach. And for me, this is exciting as a first-time new head coach hire as it gets. I'm confused on how little is discussed about Urban Meyer and then Trevor Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence, by all accounts, is the fourth best quarterback prospect to ever come out. It goes Elway, it goes Manning, it goes Andrew Luck, and it goes Trevor Lawrence. There's been no question Trevor Lawrence was going to be the first pick in the draft since senior year of high school. It's been a lock. This dude, and again, this is actually me praising him. He's at 21, 22. He's married. He's a devout Christian. This guy cares nothing about He doesn't care about anything besides football. That's it. It's football. It's family. It's God. That's all that matters in this guy. And he's coming in with not a lot of pressure. How often, again, it's the fourth most highly acclaimed quarterback prospect ever. The spotlight around Elway at the time, I don't know. I wasn't alive. I would assume it was hot, red hot. I mean, the guy got drafted by the Yankees, right? He forced a trade out of Baltimore, the Colts at that point, to Denver. Andrew Luck was a huge story, and he led his team to the playoffs in this very same division. And Peyton Manning, I remember being a huge story with the Colts as well. So, this guy, I feel like, comes in with not a lot of pressure on his shoulders. And, low-key, the cupboard isn't bare for him when it comes to offensive weapons. Travis Etienne was an awesome running back in college. Obviously, got drafted in the first round. James Robinson is a beast. And a certified beast in the backfield. They've spent on their offensive line. There's talent on that offensive line. And the quarterback, if he was any good, could make use out of Marvin Jones, DJ Shark, and LaVisca Chenault. I think I'm saying that right. So, if he can play well, if he matches at any level that the hype that comes with him, this wide receiver core is fine as far as I'm concerned. And something that you kind of touched on or I think I should have probably started with is the continuity on defense. Defense was terrible last year. Not very good. They didn't perform very well. But each of the top 10 front seven defenders by snap count returns, according to Football Outsiders. That's not my work. Josh Allen is their defensive end. Could be a force multiplier if he's healthy and right. They get to run it back with Kalavon Shiasin. I know I messed that up, but he was their first-round defensive end selection in last year's draft. He was terrible last year, couldn't make a second year leap. I like the linebackers, they're above average. Secondary, I don't know if they spent money on it, they drafted for it, but again, if the coach is a good hire and the quarterback is what he is expected to be, I like the Jaguars over 6.5. It's going to come to the window with me. I just, after the Carson Wentz news today, I also like the Colts. Looking at this Titans roster, I would love to sprinkle +900 on the Jaguars on the division. I think 6.5 is a pretty good bet, so I'm going to take it.
Yeah, well, just touch on the defense quick. It's flooded with first and second round picks. And you know what? For once, they may be able to play with a little bit of a lead early in games or play without a massive deficit early in the games at the very least. But I think the defense can take a big step forward without really adding a whole lot. And yeah, I'm very excited about this offense, mainly because of Lawrence. But as you say, Urban Meyer certainly has the college record. And, you know, he has a young enough team that I think it's a good bridge for him to go from college to the NFL with this young Jaguars roster. And especially, you know, with the main two pieces having had so much success in college, I think it's a good match for everyone. And yeah, I'm very high on them. The +900 for the division. No, I'm a little more interested now, talked into it a little bit. But yeah, you're right. Even if Carson Wentz is healthy for week one, just think about last week when everyone was in such a panic about how bad the Colts were going to be without him, without Quentin Nelson. So just imagine one of those guys does get re-injured or gets another injury. They were right back in the same spot. Jaguars worth a shot. And the Titans lost their offensive coordinator, lost a couple other pieces. So +900. purely on the fact that's higher than it should be, I don't hate it.
All right. Well, that covers our Jacksonville Jaguars coverage here. I covered twice in one sentence. That stinks. Shitty broadcasting. Whatever. We're going to move on to the Indianapolis Colts, which is coming off of an 11-5 season last year. They lost in the wild card round of the Buffalo Bills in Philip Rivers' final season. Perhaps, hopefully, I don't know. I'm not a big Philip Rivers fan. He might, depending on this whole Carson Wentz thing, which is like positive news today, maybe there's been rumors of Rivers coming back. I don't know, whatever. We're not going to talk about Rivers again. It's the fourth season for Frank Reich. He's got his fourth new quarterback under center. The former OC Nick Sirianni became Philadelphia's head coach, but they still have defensive coordinator Matt Eberflus. I think that's how it's pronounced. Frank Reich has made the postseason two of his first 3 years. He's a coach that I'm high on. A lot of the analytics guys I think are high on, and I would definitely take a flyer on Carson Wentz coming back with Frank Reich. We'll talk about that in a second. The regression stuff looks pretty good, actually. Football Outsiders projects them to have the 23rd toughest schedule, so very easy. Projected win totals has them in the same like ballpark, sixth easiest schedule. Colts face the third easiest schedule of opposing defenses, but a tough schedule of opposing offenses. But I like their defense this year. They're ninth in prep time, fourth in rest time. They're 22nd in fumble luck last season. So there could be a little regression or regression back to the mean progression, however you want to phrase that. So there is some regression stuff that looks good for them. 5-2 in one score game. So whatever, we don't know about that, but they're favored in 12 games this year, coming into the season, and they're actually favorite in the first two road games, which is pretty surprising. But I think Vegas, whatever the sports books are high on the Colts, which, all right. So I'm just going to make the pro Carson Wentz argument, cause that's the elephant in the room. Has there ever been a situation, Esten, where, and think long and hard, and you don't have to think that long and hard, has there ever been a situation where a quarterback was in a completely shitty shitty coaching situation, the organization wasn't a fit, they were trending down, and then they went to another team, got rescued, got recovered, and turned into an above average to a top 10 quarterback? Do you know of any situation in the history of football?
I don't know of a situation in which it's happened where that quarterback's receiving core was as bad as Carson Wentz's is. Like
The Colts.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Like for them to go out, make that move, and then not do anything to help out his receivers. They brought back T.Y. Hilton. Great. Michael Pittman Jr., a solid rookie season when healthy. Zach Pascal here as the third option. Okay, don't really care. Jack Doyle and Mo'Ali Cox as the top two tight ends. No, not good. Like, why not tailor this offense to what Carson Wentz had when he was successful in Philadelphia? You let the Patriots go up this year, get Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith, the top two tight ends on the market. The Eagles were reportedly willing to listen to offers at least on Zach Ertz. I don't get how the Colts didn't go out and get any one of those three guys or somebody else. Didn't take a receiver in the draft until Mike Strachan in the seventh round. I don't understand this.
So the situation that I was alluding to, or the player that I was alluding to, was actually Ryan Tannehill, right, with the Titans. And Ryan Tannehill, I swear to God, I was always high on Ryan Tannehill. I thought Ryan Tannehill was good and got a bad shake. He got Adam Gase. Gase became a verb because of Tannehill and what he did with Arthur Smith, now the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, with the Tennessee Titans. But Ryan Tannehill, up until that point, he never showed the upside of the ceiling that Carson Wentz had in 2017. Like, Carson Wentz was legitimately the MVP before he went down, right? And maybe he truly is washed, right? But Philadelphia is the toughest sports town in the country. Like, he's from North Dakota. He could absolutely, I'm willing to listen to him being a fish out of water in that situation. Like, I didn't like Philly. Philly is a tough place to play, right? And then he lost his offensive coordinator, which reportedly was the whole brains of the operation. And as it looks now, as it appears now, he was the brains of that operation. So if he's more comfortable in this situation, he has more talent around him, which I think he does. I'm going to make an argument for the tight ends and the running back situation or room here in a second, but he could easily turn his season or turn his career around, in my opinion, and just get to, you know, an average quarterback. And if you're an average quarterback with Frank Reich in this division, you could win this division. You can win multiple games. You and I, neither one of us were into Phil Rivers coming into last year. And throughout the entire season, we weren't into Phil Rivers. He lost week one to the Jacksonville Jaguars, and we're kind of like, see, right? They won 11 games, and they could have beaten the Bills in the wild card round, right? Like, he has the same tools, granted, and I'm much higher in the tight end tandem than you are, I guess. I hear what you're saying. I think Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry are clearly better, but like Mo Alie-Cox is a legit red zone threat. A former basketball player, play above the rim. Obviously, he's like 6'8", 6'7", something like that. Jack Doyle is just solid, great hands, good blocker, does everything that you want your standard prototypical tight end to do. So I think there's talent there. I'm with you. The wide receiver room sucks. If Michael Pittman, who I've seen flashes out of and kind of like, if he has a breakout season, maybe they're below average to average. They're probably going to be bad, right? T.Y. Hilton looks washed. The running back room, I'm like a legit stand for, right? Marlon Mack was sick last year. Jonathan Taylor was awesome in his rookie year. And if you look at Nyheim Hines' like pro football focus grades and Football Outsiders grades, he's sick. He was great. They got three running backs back there with unquestionably a top three offensive line in the league. And this defense is stacked. They have all pros on every level of the defense, between Darius Leonard in the middle, calling the quarterback of the defense. DeForest Buckner up front is an absolute beast. They do have some depth in offensive line or defensive line. And the secondary, Xavier Rhodes had a bounce back season his first year with the Colts last year. They have an awesome slot cornerback in Kenny Moore, and consistency and continuity in their safety position. So I like the Colts. I liked them a lot more before this injury stuff with Carson Wentz, but we got good news this week that he and Quentin Nelson, both of which had the same injury and had the same surgery, are trending towards playing week one. Both are walking, I think, or at least Carson Wentz is walking without a boot on his surgically repaired ankle, so he's trending to playing. There's too much range, there's too much spectrum, so I'm just gonna lean over Colts 9 here. That's It's a lean. It's not going to go to the window with me. What are your final thoughts on this unit, this team?
Yeah, this defense is great, and that's clearly the key here. And you mentioned the offensive line being good. So the pieces are certainly in place for Carson Wentz to just be okay. I think that's all he needs to do, as long as, you know, Frank Reich can tell him and convey that that's all he needs to be. I think that's fine. And yeah, I probably go over 8.5 on a flat 9. I'm not sure I want to touch it. -110 both sides for the playoffs. Yes, no. Not super interested in either side there. But what are they for the division?
I have them at
+800.
I have +130 to win the division.
Oh, yeah.
What are you seeing? You said +800.
I don't know. Yeah, I have a wrong number.
I would take that one.
I think that's right. Yeah. +130. That's fine. Especially talking, the Jaguars probably aren't there yet. And there's a lot more uncertainty around the Titans going, or as much uncertainty around the Titans going into the season as the Colts. So yeah, certainly a window there for them to win, you know, what really is the league's most wholly unimpressive or most open division anyway.
Yeah, I don't hate that. Those final thoughts. All right, let's go to the Tennessee Titans here. They're favored to win the division. Super Bowl odds are +2000. AFC odds plus 1200, division odds minus 145 to make the playoffs. The yes is minus 140. The no is plus 115. Their win total is over 9.5 with the under slightly more juice, minus 115. The over is minus 105. Those are the latest numbers that I pulled. Last year, they won the division with an 11-5 record, but lost to the Ravens at home in the playoff revenge game in the wild card round, 20-13. Mike Vrabel enters his fourth year as the head coach as well. He's bringing along a new OC in Todd Downing after Arthur Smith, again, took the Atlanta head coaching gig. Vrabel is, you know, considered this dumb jock, but he's gone over his win total in his first three seasons, consistently has his team ready to play, and is as situationally strong as perhaps any coach in this division. Their regression metrics looking pretty good. Well, actually, it's kind of all over the place. So they have the 13th easiest schedule according to projected win totals, but the fifth toughest schedule according to Warren Sharp's projected opponent's efficiency. But then again, 21st toughest schedule on DVOA. So not sure there. They are an underdog in 9 games, which is very interesting to me. It would appear that Vegas or sportsbooks are a little down on them. I don't know. They have 5 games where the opponent has more than a week of prep time. They're 27th in rest time, so that's kind of scary. They have a brutal stretch of games from week 6 to week 10. They were 8th in fumble luck, 7-2 in one score games. But with the hallmark of the Titans defense and really what kind of had their ceiling pretty low was that they were awful in defending on third down and in the red zone. This offense just absolutely looks sick in my opinion. Ryan Tannehill is unquestionably a top 10 quarterback if you're being objective and just looking at the past year and a half. He's damn near top 5, honestly. Derrick Henry, Hall of Fame running back in his prime. You got a Hall of Fame addition, a wide receiver with Julio Jones, pairing him with another top 20 wide receiver. Very solid offensive line. I think the tight end, Anthony Firkser, is going to be able to fill in Jonnu Smith's missing production. There's really just not a lot of bad to say about the offense. The defense is the question mark again. 29th in defensive DVOA last year. They were really bad against the pass, pretty good against the run. They addressed the secondary by signing Janoris Jenkins and drafting Caleb Farley in the first round. I don't know, though. I'm passing on all Titans futures because the house and I like the Colts. I'm high on the Jaguars. That underdog in 9 games thing really jumps out to me. Also, the defense for the Tennessee Titans is too much of a gamble. It has talent to be an about above average unit, but they were awful in high leverage spots last season. Their expected variance with that kind of stuff. And if Tennessee can like play better on third down and red zone, they'll exceed their expectations because this offense should be awesome. And if their defense, they hit with that Caleb Farley pick, they hit with Janoris Jenkins, Jeffrey Simmons continues to break out as an elite pass rusher or defensive lineman. They get an uptick in production on the defensive line as a whole. This team could be a legitimate Super Bowl contender, but I'm passing all my Tennessee Titans futures. How do you feel?
I have to lean toward the under 9.5 minus 115. I think there's just too much that can go wrong, and maybe this is just me being spurned by the teams I actually cheer for. But I've come to put a lot of stock into the importance of losing an offensive coordinator, especially one as good as Arthur Smith and as great of an impact as he had on this team. Derrick Henry, doesn't really need an offensive coordinator to just run through people. But as we saw last year with Christian McCaffrey and the Carolina Panthers, number one running back can get hurt. And these teams who are still built around a clear-cut workhorse running back like that, it's tough to make up for it. The receiving core here is a whole lot better than in Carolina, and Ryan Tannehill is a whole lot better than Teddy Bridgewater. But Derrick Henry obviously is still so important to this team, and taking away the offensive coordinator who, deserves at least a large share of the credit for Ryan Tannehill becoming this top 10 or higher quarterback, I think there just runs a lot of risk here. And you're counting on the defense to take all those next steps to compensate for any decrease in offensive production. I'm just not a believer in that, even with a couple minor additions throughout the roster on the back end there. It's under 9.5 for the Titans for me. And you know, that kind of sways me more toward the Colts plus 130 to win this division.
Yeah, I began my handicap or just reading up on the Tennessee Titans feeling the same way that you did. But I just, this offense is just sick. It's sick. I hear your point about Arthur Smith, but I don't know. I'm not an X's and O's guy. I don't think it was like very complicated. Like, yo, we're going to beat the shit out of this defense with Derrick Henry. They're going to load the box and we're going to hit them over the top. Bottom line, right? And now they have Julio Jones on the other side. So it's like, it's just going to be easier in my opinion. But I don't know. The defense is a question mark. And, you know, this is kind of the sucker cop out that you'll hear from sports gambling podcasts. But all the info is baked in online and the numbers are right. I don't know.
On a pure talent basis, Julio Jones, obviously a whole lot better than Corey Davis, probably better than Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith together. But you take two of those, his top two targets from last season away. AJ Brown missed some time. Josh Reynolds is in here in the mix too. So it's a lot of new pieces and no offensive coordinator for Ryan Tannehill. I'm going to lean toward bad things happening.
So I'm going to talk about this and go into the window here, but it feels like people are skeptical or unsure about Julio Jones coming into Tennessee. Like, how is he going to fit in the offensive system? Is he going to get the targets that he did with Matt Ryan? Is he too old? Is he washed? I don't see it that way. Like, I think we got a Hall of Famer in the prime, maybe exiting his prime, but holy shit. Like, I don't know. I think the market's a little low on Julio Jones. I'm going to talk about that and go into the window. But let's get over to the AFC West here. We're going to start with the bottom of the division, or at least the team that's projected to finish in the bottom of the division. Like every year, it's the Las Vegas Raiders. And last year they were 8-8. They started off promising, 6-3 after week 9, but you know, ended typically disappointing. Their defense was terrible. Their offense is, you know, pretty good. John Gruden's an offensive guy. Derek Carr, like it or not, is, you know, top 10 to top 13 quarterback in the league based on most metrics. 10th by PFF out of 38 graded quarterbacks, 9th in completion over expectation, 11th in QBR, 10th in quarterback rating. I mean, he doesn't have that great of weapons to work with. Darren Waller, a tight end, is just absolutely nasty, unquestionably atop the third best tight end in the NFL behind Kittle and Kelsey. I like their running back situation. They added Kenyon Drake. Josh Jacobs is low-key a stud, 1,000 yards in his first two seasons. Henry Ruggs, going back to the wide receivers and Derek Carr's questionable weapons around him. Henry Ruggs sucked last year. Hunter Renfro is consistent, but you know, they let Nelson Aguilar go, who was unfortunately very productive for them. I think unfortunately for them, because if you can get something out of Nelson Aguilar, you could probably get something out of a much better wide receiver. But they didn't get a much better wide receiver in lieu of losing Nelson Aguilar. They didn't do much to add to their defense, which was pretty bad. Although low-key, I think they have some defensive depth between Max Crosby, Cleveland Farrell, Carl Nassib, Ngakoue. They took a flyer on Solomon Thomas and Gerald McCoy, so we'll see. Their defense, their linebacker unit's pretty good. Their secondary is bad, but maybe Abram could quit being a spaz. Mullen could continue his progress. They took a flyer on cornerback Casey Hayward, so maybe if that pays dividends, you know, they'll be pretty good. The regression stuff is interesting, Eston, at least as far as I'm concerned. Hardest schedule by opponent's projected win total, but fifth easiest schedule by opponent's projected efficiency and easiest schedule of opposing offenses. So that questionable defense could get a little bit of reprieve by playing playing an easy schedule of offenses. Average in net and rest edge, 17th in prep time, so average in that as well. But 13th toughest schedule by Football Outsider. So it's kind of going back and forth here. 5-4 in one score games, minus 11 in turnover differential, second worst fumble luck. They had the 6th most adjusted games lost according to Football Outsiders on their offensive line, 5th most for their wide receivers. So if they're healthier in those positions, there's no reason to think why this team can't win at least another 8 games. Their odds right now are the win total 7 with minus, I think it's minus 110 each way. Hold on, let me get to my sheet. Yep, 7 minus 110 each way to win the, to make the playoffs. The Yes is plus 350. No is minus 500. The Raiders to win the divisions plus 10,000. Win the AFC is plus 2,200. And then to win the, my odds have to be off here, but to win the Super Bowl is plus 10,000, which doesn't jive with the division and the division odds. So I'm off there, but I'll get those here in a minute. If you can find them, great. But I do lean to the Chargers over 7. They didn't do much to help the defense. There's not much changing, but like it or not, John Gruden's improved in win totals in each of his first 3 seasons, and he's doing good stuff over there. He has them believing, they play hard for him. So I'm going to lean over to the Raiders winning at least 7 games. What are you thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. This team had, you know, one of the most difficult 2020 seasons with the COVID protocols. They had one or two games rescheduled midweek because of not having enough players available. And they still won 8 games. Them winning 8 games was miraculous last season, given all the, outside factors, especially like how that affected the offensive line specifically. And they still strung together an 8-8-win season. I think adding an extra game and putting together proper normal practice weeks, I think over 6.5 is quite manageable. Obviously, the minus 160 payout isn't great on that. I'd probably rather go straight ahead to the plus 350 to make the playoffs. As a wildcard team, I don't see them at all challenging the Chiefs for the division. But plus 350 for the final playoff spot, I think, is worth a shot. Not interested in AFC or Super Bowl odds either, but I can see this being a playoff team. And yeah, you mentioned offensively, the weapons for Derek Carr are still the biggest issue, but you also mentioned the depth across the board, very prevalent in the defense. Also, Marcus Mariota is a fine backup quarterback, showed that once last year in limited action. Kenyon Drake is a great supplement to Josh Jacobs as well. That gets rid of the community approach they've had to back him up past 2 years, which they struggled to do. So yeah, I like this team. Depth's a big reason why. Plus 350, worth a shot for the playoffs. Over 6.5 wins. If you can get over 7.5, maybe at a better payout, I'd take a long look at that.
So let me finish my milk here on the odds. Sorry, I messed that up, guys. The Raiders to win the division is plus 1,500. To make the playoffs, I have plus 350. No is minus. Yes, plus 350. No is minus 500. To win the AFC, it's plus 3,000 for the Raiders. And to win the Super Bowl is plus 6,000. So sorry about that, guys, but figure that out, clear that up. Let's go over to the Denver Broncos, who to me, I think, is the most interesting team in the division. Maybe it's just because in our little pre-production meeting, impromptu meeting, we had a back and forth about the Broncos, but it's a hard one to figure out. They're 5-11 last year, missed the playoffs for the 5th straight season. I think they're just absolutely loaded on defense. They have a pretty solid offense around Drew Lock, but Drew Lock is just not an NFL starting quarterback, in my opinion. The regression stuff looks so good for Denver, though. They have the second easiest schedule by opponent's forecasted win total. The easiest schedule, according to Warren Sharp, by projected opponent's efficiency. 6th easiest schedule, according to Football Outsiders. They go from the 4th toughest schedule to the easiest schedule. Near top 10 in net rest edge, prep time, rest time. They had the 7th most adjusted games lost to Football Outsiders last year, just for the entire team. So hopefully they get some positive injury luck this year. If you remember last year, they were missing their whole quarterback room for a game against the Saints, which they obviously got crushed in, or they lost. They were 4-6 in one score games, 1-3 in games decided by 3 or fewer points. minus 26 in turnover differential. So those are the regression metrics. And if all those things kind of go back or, you know, progress back to the mean, however that you want to put that, then this team could, you know, reach its goals. Let's talk about the odds here, right? The odds for, or the team wins for the Broncos, 8.5 shaded to the over at minus 130, unders plus 110. To make the playoffs, yes, is plus 115. No is minus 145. To win the division, plus 500. To win the AFC, I got to make sure I have this right again. To win the AFC, the Denver Broncos are plus 1,300. To win the Super Bowl, the Denver Broncos are plus 3,000. I'm not liking the Super Bowl AFC division or the playoffs, to be honest, but I am looking at the win total because of the regression metrics and just how stacked this defense is. But again, like, Drew Lock is not a starting quarterback, in my opinion. He's got the second most turnovers in the league last season, even though he just started 13 games. He took a step backwards in pretty much all metrics in his second season. And in reality, he's like their only problem on their roster. Right, I love their second-round pick with Javonte Williams. Melvin Gordon, sneaky, had a really good year last year. And Javonte Williams is getting rave reviews in camp. So, you know, they have above-average pass catchers. Courtland Sutton will be back this year. Noah Fant was awesome. And, I don't know, for like the eighth time, this defense is just absolutely loaded. I could see him being a top-five unit if Von Miller can just have somewhat of a throwback season. So, I'm leaning over Broncos 8.5. And the market's going that way at minus 130. What are you thinking about the Broncos?
Yeah, the rest of the roster is good. Is it good enough for this to be the Rex Grossman Bears or the Trent Dilfer Ravens?
It's a million-dollar question.
The quarterback is so bad here, right? Like, Drew Lock, no, not the option at all. Teddy Bridgewater, probably not good enough to get them to the playoffs. Over 8.5 wins, you know, you may as well go ahead and take, yes, 140 to make the playoffs as well. I don't see it. Minus 105 for 8 or fewer wins. That's aside from, do you see the Denver Broncos splitting the series with the Chiefs?
No, I do not.
Do you see them sweeping the Raiders or the Chargers?
Chargers are a toss-up team for me. I could see them, envision them beating the Raiders. Yeah, they have their number. They have the Raiders' number, I think, the past couple of years. I mean, to me, it's Andrew Luck or Andrew. Drew Luck. Just Drew. Short on that one. I think Teddy Bridgewater is a better quarterback. I actually think he's going to be the starter. I mean, Pat Shurmur is offensive coordinator and was his offensive coordinator in Minnesota. Like, I don't know. Maybe they just want to see what they have in Drew Lock, but it's not like they use a top 10 pick on him. Was he in the second or third round? Like, whatever. You can cut bait with that fast. Like, yeah. I feel like they've seen the same amount of terribleness out of Drew Lock as they saw out of Paxton Lynch, and they cut Paxton Lynch's ass quick. So, I don't know. I feel like Teddy Bridgewater is a starter, which maybe isn't that sexy, but like, if you have that stacked of a roster, the defense could be that good. All you need is someone with a low floor, right? Or high floor, excuse me, low ceiling.
Yeah. I think if you're going to bet Denver Broncos futures, you need to wait until the week one depth chart is released, because if Teddy Bridgewater isn't given the starting job coming out of preseason training camp, that's because he is awful, right? Because we know Drew Lock is awful. I don't care what anybody in Denver says between now and the season, he's bad. He has proven it time and time again. But if you're naming him the starter going into the 2021 season, you're not doing that just on a week one and a week to week basis. You're making that decision and going with him as your guy this season with the rest of the roster in place and good. You're doing that because Teddy Bridgewater is bad and is a true number two. So without having any real hope of Teddy Bridgewater being the league average guy he has been for most of his career, or at least was last year in Carolina, I don't know if you can bet on this team before that decision, because there's no reason to have any faith in Drew Lock. And you know, it's been very quiet on Teddy Bridgewater this offseason and early in camp.
Yeah, I mean, if the 2021 Denver Broncos are going to make the playoffs and, you know, win a playoff game, it'll be akin to Blake Bortles of the Jacksonville Jaguars 2017. I'll gladly back Denver against mediocre or bad offenses, but I can't in good faith place future bets on what I think will be a Drew Lock led team. So that's where I stand with Denver.
They're a great in-season underdog spread team, I think, is the best thing you can say about the Denver Broncos at this point. And it's going to be a big season for Vic Fangio to prove that he can be an head coach.
Yeah, well, I actually like Vic Fangio, but I feel bad for him because it feels like John Elway is murdering him by quarterback. So I don't know, but hopefully he can get a real shot with a good quarterback. Or hey, I know, you know, Denver, their fans, most loyal fans, are just holding out hope that Drew Lock puts it together. He's got all the athletic ability, he's got enough weapons, so that's the gamble, but I want no part of it. Going to the Chargers here. Right now, the Chargers are 9.5 wins. At least that's what I pulled. Excuse me. The over is shaded to -135. The under is +115. For them to make the playoffs, yes, is +105. No is -125. The division, +500. The AFC, +1500. They actually have worse AFC odds than the Broncos. And to win the Super Bowl is +3000. So same as the Broncos. The Chargers, you know, they overhauled their coaching staff. They brought in Brandon Staley, who's bringing along with him offensive coordinator Joe Lombardi, quarterback coach from the Saints, and Ronaldo Hill, defensive coordinator and the defensive back coach, former defensive back coach of Denver Broncos. I don't have a lot to say about those guys. Just figure I'd, you know, get that out of the way. Justin Herbert was the offensive rookie of the year, but Chargers still went 7-9, and Anthony Lynn got canned. They have the 19th easiest schedule by opponents' projected win total, but third easiest by opponents' projected efficiency. Ninth toughest DVOA schedule, though, so it's kind of all over the map. I would just assume that's because, you know, their division's pretty good. They had the fourth most adjusted games lost on defense, seventh most on offensive line and running back, 5-7 in one-score games. So the regression metrics are there. Justin Herbert can take a step forward. Okay, Brandon Staley, if he proved to be the reason, or one of the big reasons why Los Angeles Rams defense was as sick as it was last year, he brings that same coaching chops and success to the Chargers. All right, I'm a huge, huge Derwin James fan. And if Derwin James is back and he's healthy, this could be an all-world player for this defense. They parted ways with their linebacker, Denzel Perryman, the Chargers did, and Casey Hayward in the secondary. But, you know, they drafted Asante Samuel Jr., Joey Bosa's an elite pass rusher. So there's stuff with this for Brandon Staley to work with. You know, it's a top-heavy team with elite playmakers on every unit. But in my opinion, with an unproven coach and staff, Chargers will probably underachieve on their expectations if they suffer from any injuries. Nothing stands out to me on their odds sheet. I'm probably just going to pass, but very interested, obviously, with Justin Herbert. What are you thinking for this team?
Yeah, the offensive line was bad last year, both in pass blocking and run blocking. 31st in pass block win rate, 32nd in run block win rate. Made a couple additions there this offseason. Rashawn Slater, first-round pick. Corey Winsley over from the Green Bay Packers. So maybe. Mike Williams is getting forgot about, slept on completely as a number two option opposite Keenan Allen in the passing game. Not a whole lot of depth behind those two. Jared Cook comes in as a fine replacement for a usually injured Hunter Henry. And Donald Parham did some things last year, former XFLer. So, yeah, Justin Herbert is absolutely the key here. I don't think there's any reason to count on regression from him. Hopefully a full season from Austin Eckler. Chargers always have horrible injury luck. What happened in their backfield last year was something else. It just seemed next man up. Okay, he had 1 week, and he's now hurt for 4-6. So, if they can have any sort of a healthy season for the first time in seemingly forever, I think they're a good, solid team. The idea to change the full coaching staff after your rookie quarterback had a best ever rookie quarterback season, and there were once again so many excuses, injury excuses on the defense, to do a full house change, I think is risky, especially knowing that Justin Herbert is how you're going to live or die for the next 2 to 5 years, at least. I don't know. I'm more interested in playoffs plus 105 than over wins. I think you can do Raiders and Chargers, yes, to make the playoffs, both at plus money, and come out ahead if one hits. That's probably the play for me. I'm not interested in plus 500 for the division or anything beyond that. Obviously, this team isn't good enough to give a serious challenge to the Chiefs over the course of the season. But yeah, I don't hate betting yes, Chargers make the playoffs plus 105 alongside Raiders yes to make the playoffs plus 350. You just need one of them to win.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought you did a really good job kind of summing up my thoughts as well on the Chargers. You know, they have pretty crappy injury luck historically. And the point about Anthony Lynn and Justin Herbert's, you know, all-time rookie season, I think, is important, because like the goal for every front office and every team is to find the franchise quarterback and the coach that fits the franchise quarterback, right? I mean, Justin Herbert really couldn't have done any better than he did last year. And for as much criticism as Anthony Lynn rightfully deserves for things, he knocked it out of the park with him. So I'm with you. I mean, the way that they, the guy that they hired, who's this young defensive guru, well, he needs to be a young defensive guru. That's it. Like, Justin Herbert looks the part, feels the part. They have weapons. Hopefully they stay healthy. But that defense needs to be on point next year for you guys to exceed expectations. And I don't know, defense isn't very predictive year over year, so I'm not that excited about betting in their future, so I'm not going to give any out. Let's talk about the Kansas City Chiefs here. Kansas City Chiefs obviously went to the Super Bowl last year. No one's talking about a Super Bowl hangover with them, which makes sense because they have an all-time coach and an all-time quarterback. They're 14-2 last season, AFC champions for the fifth straight season. Their schedule stuff looks pretty good. 18th toughest schedule according to Football Outsiders, but the second easiest schedule according to Warren Sharp by projected opponent efficiency. They were 8-1 in one score games. I don't know how much of that can actually regress. They were they had 10.7 wins on the Pythagorean win total, but were 14-2 last season. So they did get lucky, but like, how lucky is it if you have Patrick Mahomes? That's what I wonder, you know? And that +7, +6 in turnover differential, +9 in sack margin. Again, these are figures that are metrics that indicate regression or usually regress year over year, but considering it's Mahomes and Reed, I'm not banking on that. They were dead last in red zone defense, but third in offensive third down percentage. Again, things that I think the defense could improve, but I don't think the offense is going anywhere. It's hard to fade this team. You know, you get the Super Bowl hangover. Everything the Chiefs did this offseason was essentially to protect Mahomes, and it's hard to argue with that. You know, they addressed their biggest concern, which was the offensive line, which cost them the Super Bowl. Traded for Orlando Brown, signed Joe Thuney, signed Austin Blythe, and drafted a center in the second round from Oklahoma. So it's tough to see how this defense or how this team is going to really, you know, come very short of their win total or you know, underperform expectations. So it's not a team I'm eager to fade, even though their defense is going to be bad and there is obvious regression metrics. Do you have strong feelings on them? And before I turn over to you, again, I'm going with the cop-out gambling stuff. The numbers are right. There's no value. That's how I feel about this.
Fair. This team did what it needed to improve this offseason. I think the offensive line additions are tremendous. Orlando Brown, Joe Thuney, Lauren Duvernay-Tardif, the right guard. He's coming back after a year off as well, a big part of that Super Bowl winning team. And as you said, they found the perfect cure to a Super Bowl hangover, and that's to just not win one. So, you know, the road's cleared for the Kansas City Chiefs this year. They're over their biggest hurdle. You know, the improved offensive line, that's going to help Clyde Edwards-Helaire going into his second season, largely a non-factor for big chunks of last season. I think that's going to change this year with the better offensive line in front of them. And, of course, the passing attack, which is remains incredible. See a Sammy Watkins, the combination of Mecole Hardman and DeMarcus Robinson both getting more work, and Antonio Callaway, if he can get on the field, I think that's big as well. Yeah, defense is still the weakness. That's fine, at least until the playoffs, the Super Bowl, right? Like, they can tear through the regular season with a bad defense. Wouldn't be the first time they've done it, and they'd be far from the first team to do it. So over 12 and a half wins plus 105, that 14 last year, you add an extra game. The division as a whole isn't a whole lot better. They were 4-2 in the division last year. If they get one more there, they can get into the playoffs and, you know, fans back in attendance. And that's one of the best home stadiums in football. So I think there are enough factors lining up for me to believe that the Chiefs won't suffer two-win regression.
Yep. The odds are Chiefs to win the Super Bowl plus 500, to win the AFC plus 240, to win the division minus 340, make the playoffs yeses minus 1,000, those plus 600. The over and the win total is 12.5. The over juice to minus 125. The under is at plus 105. Any of those lines actionable for you?
You have minus 125 for the over 12.5. Yeah, I think that's still fine. Let that be noticed to shop around as best as you can. But yeah, I'm fine with the over Chiefs 12.5, kind of whatever you have to pay for it down to minus 150.
All right. Yeah, like I said, I don't have much on the Chiefs. I mean, what is there to say? You know, they have one of the greatest quarterbacks ever, one of the greatest coaches ever, one of the greatest tight ends ever. I think they're pretty thin with pass catchers, but, you know, when you have Kelce and Tyreek Hill and very little injury history between the both of them, you could be thin. I'm going to save my Clyde Edwards-Helaire stuff from the going to the window because I actually have him on my bet slip. But without any further ado, let's kind of wrap this podcast up and go to our final segment, which we call Going to the Window, and lock in our best bets from this episode.
The Bet Slippin' Podcast, Going to the Window.
All right, Essen, I got three picks here, three overs. I'm such a schnook, such a bozo. You betting overs, I'm a sucker. Fade me here. Actually, don't fade me. I'm gonna win. I'm gonna cash these bets. But first on my slip, I'm going Jaguars over 6.5 wins. I'm buying stock on Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence, which in my opinion is just shockingly low at this point. Look at the time codes, go back to the Jaguars stuff to hear my full handicap of it, but I'm liking the Jaguars over 6.5 wins this year. What do you got on your bet slip? I got two more. What do you got on yours?
I'm in full support of that pick. I think that's great. And, you know, if the Jaguars had a bigger fan base, we could see that line set higher, right? That's the book, taking advantage of a team not getting a whole lot of national hype. They can set that number low. I think over is the way to go. My number one pick is Denver Broncos under 8.5 wins minus 105.
All righty. I got a couple player props here that I found, you know, looking at all these different books, but you can find Julio Jones over 1,025.5 receiving yards. His athleticism hasn't really dipped, in my opinion. He's averaging roughly 1,200 receiving yards per season. If he plays 16 games, I think this is a lock. Tannehill showed a really good job being able to incorporate a second wide receiver into the offense last season. And Jones is absolutely much better than Corey Davis, obviously. This number's too low. I mean, that's the basis of me betting the over, but I'm going with Julio Jones. Is it Julio or Julio? I always mess that up. Jay Jones over 1,025.5 receiving yards. And I have one more on my bet slip. Do you have another one? You don't have to.
Okay.
You're gonna look sharper if you don't have one. Actually,
that's true. Putting it all on the Denver Broncos being trash. Yeah, that's fine. I'm fine with that. Actually, you go ahead.
All right. I'm taking Clyde Edwards-Helaire over 900 and a half yards. So 901 essentially. Kansas City plays the second easiest schedule of rush defenses. And like we said, they beefed up their offensive line by assigning Joe Thuney, trading for Orlando Brown and Austin Blythe. I also think they're a little thin at wide receiver or pass catcher. And I think with them spending the money on the offensive line, they're going to try to keep Pat Mahomes out of harm's way, try to control the pace a little bit more, and lean into that offensive line by running the ball more. Clyde Edwards-Helaire was 17th in PFF's running back grades. He had 800 yards in 13 games behind an offensive line that was bad last season, was very banged up. They're going to want to show that this guy, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, wasn't a first-round bust, and I think he's going to get a bunch of offensive snaps and a whole bunch of carries this year. So going over 900 yards, well, 900 and a half rushing yards for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. That's my bet slip, and that's our AFC West, AFC South primer. Next week, we have the NFC North and the NFC East previews. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, and be sure to also check out our website, sportsbookwire.usatoday.com, where we're handicapping major sporting events and just regular season games for all the major sports leagues daily. So check out all of our stuff and our awesome content on sportsbookwire.com. Do you have any parting thoughts or any things to say to the listeners before we bounce?
That's good for me. Enjoy the preseason for what it's worth.
Yeah, preseason football. Yeah, I wish that I could give you guys more on preseason football, but truthfully, between baseball and just like the regular season preview, I don't have any time to handicap the preseason.
The CFL's back. Those games actually matter. That's where the action is this weekend. Preseason started, so that means it just gets over with quickly.
And again, if you do want to be informed on your CFL bets, be sure to check out our coverage on sportsbookwire.com. Thanks for streaming the Bet Slippin' Podcast. For Eston and Jeff, until next time, peace.
You've been listening to the Bet Slippin' Podcast with Jeff Clark and Eston McLaren from USA Today Sportsbook Wire. Listen and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.